4 p.m. Okay, we call this meeting to the True Commission Committee meeting to order at 4 p.m. I'm going to start off by saying who we are. We'll start with Jeff.
Velma Roundsville, Northwest CPAC.
Raymond Day, Southeast CPAC.
Charles Barr, representing the Council President.
I am Dr. Keishan Chambliss Hargrove, representing President, as well as Chair.
Fred Tyson, Southwest CPAC.
Council President.
Tommy Carter, Council Auditor's Office.
Okay, all right, thank you. Right now, let's go ahead and review the minutes and see if there's anything to be revised or corrected.
Move approval as presented.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And opposed? Okay, it's been properly approved in a second, so we'll go into public comment. Yes, sir. And just, yes, sir. Just before you start, I want to do some rules of engagement. If we can try each commissioner try to keep it to like three minutes on questions, so everybody get a chance. Yes, sir.
Point of order. I think it's just public comments.
No, I'm talking about now.
3 minutes.
No, I'm talking about afterwards.
When we get started.
Our
comments. Yeah,
yes.
I agree.
Him. Yeah. We'll have to cut it as needed.
All right.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, my name is John Philanthropic Resiliency Nooney, 8356 Bascom Road, Jacksonville, Florida 32216. I'm in City Council District 4, CPAC Planning District 3, School Board District 3. And, I've been advocating, for Pottsburg Creek Public Park, which is Category 1 wetlands next to a FEMA house. And, I've been going to a lot of meetings for well over a year. But let me just say, corruption on our waterways is massive. And, I know that, the Inspector General is on the agenda. And that's really primarily why I'm here. I've gone, let me just say, there's a movie out there. It's called McMillions, HBO documentary. And, Mark Devereaux, he's on the Jacksonville Waterways Commission. He told me about it. It's a six-part series. It's here in Jacksonville. Well, we could have a series called McParks. And, I'm serious. Start with our fine money. I was coming here before. In my opinion, the misappropriation of tax dollars, and being diverted, it's massive. It's huge. And so anyway, what I handed out to you, what I like to call is just evidence. And let me just say, I'm participating in this resiliency thing. I don't know how much more time I have. But you know what? You open it up. And here's the picture. Jacksonville today, not tomorrow, not yesterday, today. And I'm in this thing four times. So what I handed out to you is a subcommittee thing. Now this, I'm not in the minutes, okay? But Councilman Mike Gay is. And, this is just a microcosm of just, and this was just a couple days ago. So, I've gone to the IG. First of all, I go to the OGC. They send me to the IG. I've been to the state attorney. I've been to the attorney general. It's the biggest runaround going. So anyway, we're not the bad guys in this. And, tomorrow's the River Accord. I'm going to that. Monday is, we're getting a new school superintendent. I plan on going to that. Then we got city council. I plan on going to that. Public access is the worst it's ever been in this city, the worst, and it's in the report. So, I'm here. You are the true commission. Taxation, revenue, utilization of expenditures. And I came to the true commission, years ago. You pull the tapes. We're not the bad guys here. So thank you for listening, and I hope somebody will be back in touch with me.
Again, thank you for always, you know, being inquisitive about what's going on and your dedication, as well as, number one, I want to make sure that, and I'll let other commissioners speak as well. Definitely, I would definitely refer you back to your city councilman. Have you have met with them about your concerns?
Thank you for that question. No, you know, my councilman is District 4. You got 5 at large. You also have the administration.
Correct.
It is the biggest runaround between the executive and legislative branch. And so, you know, I could eventually even go beyond that. But you're right. I will reach out. Everyone, it's always start with your councilman. And even my CPAC. You know, this isn't old news. But thank you for that question.
Again, the city councilmen, they work for you.
You're right.
Mr. Nooney, didn't you and Councilmember Carrico go kayaking down Pottsburg Creek in the last couple of months?
We did, okay. And it was magical. It couldn't have gone any better. And so his response was you know, to get in touch with the administration. I contacted Scott Wilson, Bill Delaney, you know, and, you know, they just didn't have anything. Their position was no.
What is it you're wanting the city to do?
Well,
I mean, to allege fraud and corruption, that's pretty significant accusation.
It is.
So what evidence do you have?
Oh, I got tons of it. I could, you know, you do discovery, we'll fill up this room. You know, but you know, like I said, I don't want to go down that path. You know, but you know what? I have no problem. This is not, look what I just shared with you just a couple days ago. And you know what? I've been, you know, to the inspector general. And you know what, Jamie, what do you do when nobody gets back in touch with you? What do you do when you're just completely ignored? And so, and that's really the case. And so here I am. I just showed you something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it gets back, you know, to the public records and even my speaker card, not even being recognized. You know, and that's 3 subcommittees. I'm, like I said, I'm in this thing. And this is, a follow-up to that. So, it's just, you're right. I could take it to another. We'll keep going. But like I said, we got McMillions. Check that out. It's an HBO documentary. And like I said, we could have McParks. And you know, just remain positive. I went kayaking today. I'll take anybody. I'll show anybody.
Okay. We appreciate it. Again, don't give up. We appreciate you.
And thank you again.
Thank you, sir. Do we have anyone else for public comments? All right. Our first invited speaker is Mr. Robert Lensman, Office of IG.
Hello, through the chair. My name is Robert Lensner. I'm an investigator with the Inspector General's office. A couple of months ago, we've been invited over by the True Commission to kind of present our office of who we are, what we do, and kind of outreach of that's kind of our job. We do reach out to other agencies and whatnot and let them know what we do and our mission. So Deputy Inspector General of Auditing, Dave Johnson, is going to present in our office on that. So.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. As Mr. Linsner mentioned, my name is David Johnston, and I am the Deputy Inspector General for Audit in the office. And I just want to take a moment to sort of explain to you all what our office is, or who we are, what we do, and how you all can help us accomplish our mission. So who we are, we were created in 2014. We are an agency that is separate and apart from the rest of the city government to ensure our independence. And we have a mission to root out fraud, waste, and abuse within the city, as well as increase the economy and efficiency of city operations. And our jurisdiction's rather large. So it basically encompasses anywhere city dollars touch. So, of course, that includes the executive branch, the different departments within the city. It includes the city council. But it goes beyond that. It includes grantees, grant recipients who receive city funds, contractors that receive city funds, as well as the independent agencies. So those are your JEAs, JAAs, JHAs, all the acronyms. We also have jurisdiction over the independent or the constitutional offices. So your tax collector, property appraiser, supervisor elections, part of the clerk of courts. And so it's quite broad what we can investigate and what we can look into. And our office is split up into two main units. One unit is investigations, which our Deputy Inspector General for Investigations is here, Mr. Samples. He leads that unit, and that unit looks out for fraud, waste, and abuse within the city, and on more individual level, they're looking at employees or groups of employees that may be acting inappropriately. They also have the ability to look at different programs and give advice on how the program can be improved. Now, on the audit side, that's the other side of the office. We look at things in a larger scale, not on the individual level, but usually on a program level or a unit level or policy level. So we're looking at whether the program is doing what it's supposed to do efficiently and effectively, whether they are managing their risk correctly and putting the city's money at risk. And if we come across potential fraud, waste, or abuse, we refer that to our investigations unit to take that more direct investigation into that individual. So some of the things that we investigate are individuals or entities that are misusing or stealing city funds. We look at, and that would be in the fraud category. We also look at waste, and that's goes beyond just a policy disagreement of we don't think the city should fund a particular program. That's we don't get into policy decisions. When we talk about waste, we're talking about excessive spending on unnecessary items. I like to use the example of a supervisor that has authority to buy his or her team lunch for a lunch meeting. That needs to be reasonable. We don't need Ruth, Chris, filet mignons and lobster tails and caviar for that employee meeting. So those expenditures would be likely considered waste. And then the other category that investigations looks at is abuse. So that's usually a person with some power, exerting their power, their authority, to accomplish something that's not appropriate, that's not within the city's mission. That can be in the procurement setting. That can be in just a day-to-day supervisor setting. It could be in the legislative setting. So that is us in a nutshell. There's a lot more to the office, but I want to be cognizant of your time. How you all can help is by referring things to us when you see something. You are an oversight group, and we try to read the minutes for every meeting. And I think we're going to try to make an effort to have someone from our office here at most meetings from here on out. You all have your pulse on how the money is being spent here. And we could have a collaborative relationship where you provide us with information. We can do that investigation or do those audits to get to the root of it, to determine whether there is something that there's something that's a problem with the program or the person or the unit. And so that is my abbreviated presentation, but I'm open to questions, and if you have anything specific, maybe one of my colleagues can answer it as well.
We'll go around. Commissioners, who want to start? Questions?
So we just had a presentation by a citizen, and he's probably the most active citizen in this city.
He attends numerous public meetings. I don't think I've ever been to a city council meeting where he didn't make comments on some issue, which is his constitutional right. He feels very strongly about the subject of waterways and public access to our waterways. This, the greatest natural resource this city has is its waterways. He has stated on numerous occasions that he's brought things to the attention of the Inspector General. What is the threshold that you require before you conduct some sort of an investigation into his concerns to determine whether or not there is legitimacy and that action should be taken?
So we have an intake unit that filters out complaints and on their face or not within our jurisdiction. So those might be federal questions or something to issue with the state or something that's just beyond what we can do. But if it falls within the parameters of what our office looks at, it is reviewed by our Deputy Inspector General for investigations. We do have limited resources, so we can't investigate every single complaint. However, we do that initial investigation to determine whether there is something for us to look at. Oftentimes, we get complaints of policy, that there's an issue with, I want this policy enacted by the city. That's a legislative issue. That's an executive branch issue. We can't set policy. We can recommend improvements to policies, but only in the limited scope of, can we manage the risk? Can we increase our internal control so we're not putting the cities at risk? So I'm familiar with Mr. Moody's, some of his complaints, because we attend these same meetings and I've heard them. I don't have the information readily available right now to tell you how those complaints have been handled in our office.
Now, what type of public disclosure is made by the Office of Inspector General about the concerns, not just Mr. Nooney, but any citizen who brings things to your attention? How does the public know that the concerns of an average citizen are being addressed by this office if they're within the purview and jurisdiction of the office?
Yes, sir. We publish all of our investigation reports onto our website. They are public record. Everything we do once the investigation is finalized is public record, and same with our audits. During the investigation, we do have an exception. We do have that material is confidential because it could inhibit our ability to fulfill that investigation. However, at the end of the investigation or the audit, we post those. We also, all of our records are public, so they can be requested, and we have a public records custodian. Additionally, when someone makes a complaint, our directives are to respond to that individual and tell them what action we're taking, whether we're opening up an investigation or whether we refer you to 630 City, which is the city's main helpline, or whether it should be go to the state attorney's office or the sheriff's office or some other agency that can help them.
I just don't. Jefferson had an expression that it took a lot of concern before an average citizen would take action. And I don't want, I don't want to see any citizens' concerns not at least addressed. So how can we, can you provide us with some feedback, some reporting as to what concerns of Mr. Nooney have or have not been addressed?
I'm
not expecting you to answer it now, yes. But is that possible that your office could provide that back to this body at some point within the next couple of months?
Yes, sir. I'll look.
Is that a reasonable request?
Yes, sir. I mean, if it's public record, it's something that we can absolutely provide.
And then you could tell us whether or not you have opened any inquiries into matters he's brought to your office.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. No more questions.
I'm good.
I don't have any specifics, but I know I've been around for a while to the meetings, and I remember hearing about a lot of contracts that, you know, the state would have with other, you know, entities, and what happens, what the money's not always spent well. Yes. And it's like you guys like at the back end of it. And it takes a while to, you know, to, I guess, come to the end of solution. So why is that? I mean, I should have been more specific, and I apologize for that, but I just heard it too many times, like, you know, a contractor did that. They didn't do right by the contract, and then it takes like a long time for you finally to catch up with those people.
Yes, we are in part a reactive agency. We respond to tips and complaints. However, when I became into management, and when Mr. Samples came into management, and Mr. LaSalle became the IG, we transition to be try to be proactive. However, we can only do so much. And the city council actually gave us funds for a data analytics worker who has helped compile lots of data to help us fulfill this mission. The oversight over contracts, whether it be grants or contracts for certain services of the city, there are departments that are supposed to be monitoring that in real time on a day-to-day basis. Whether there's a breakdown on that part, that's probably where the issue is going to be. We don't have the human power to monitor these programs in real time. Unfortunately, we are usually retrospective, and have to react when something bad has already happened. The audit department, I like to think, is somewhat proactive, where we are looking at programs saying, look, here are your issues. Here are the issues of your internal controls where there's risk here, that fraud can happen here or liability for the city can happen here. Fix it now before it becomes a problem. And we've looked at a couple different areas, and we make those policy recommendations, and we conduct follow-ups to make sure that those policy recommendations are fulfilled or the risk is accepted, because each unit has the right to accept a certain amount of risk. But we try to be as proactive as we can, but you know, sometimes in the contracting world, we don't have that information while it's occurring.
Appreciate your honesty. Go ahead.
Follow-up question.
Just a second. I'll make sure he... Oh, you good? Okay.
Follow-up to what issue you just raised. This relates back to Commissioner Pryor and the concerns that she's expressed on something. So if we were to ask, if we were to make a formal request as a body to your office to investigate some specific item, that's within your purview?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And then you could tell us whether or not you have jurisdiction or not.
That's correct.
Okay, and if you did, then you could open up an inquiry.
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Good afternoon. Sir. Just drove in from South Carolina, so I am a few minutes late, but I came back special for this meeting. Now, we've communicated with your office, too, about the sports complex contract, and we know that there was a problem and it was being addressed. Has your office been able to ascertain what's going on? We've looked at the reports. We know the reports go to Ms. Brochet, but I doubt very seriously that Ms. Brochet is, I mean, she's the point person, but could you just explain to us a little bit more, if you know?
So we don't have an open inquiry into that matter. I did review the documents that you were able to provide me, as well as City Council Auditor's report from February, detailing the issue. You know, it is a situation where to my understanding, the mayor's office is in negotiations with them, maybe extend the contract or continue on the contract. That's what I'm reading. So I imagine it will be addressed through that. Whether we look back retrospectively and said, here's the breakdown, the communication was made by ASM, but not acted upon by the executive branch. I don't have that information for you all today. But if you all want to make a request that we look into that, we can analyze that and see if we are able to do so.
Madam Chair, I believe there's somebody else in the audience. That
yes, I was going to go ahead. Sorry, yes, sir. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Alex Alston. I serve as the Chief of Sports and Entertainment. So through the chair to Mr. Zaboni. The ASM Global contract is under our purview, and the first approver, when they do send in their quarterly reports, comes to myself, and then Anna Brochet also approves. I started here in August. I'm actually a former ASM Global employee. I was there from 2013 to 2020. So I'm pretty uniquely positioned to help answer any of your questions you may have as it relates to the approval process. I can tell you historically how it was done doesn't mean it was right, but historically how it was always done was they would send their quarterly reports and the administration having no issue, the silence was approval. We understand that might be an issue moving forward. So what Ms. Brochet and I have done is instituted a policy to where when they do send in their quarterly reports, if there's ever a point out or a request to go to exceed the expense budgets, they're always offset by revenues later in the year, and we just have to now approve those in an email back. I do it first, and then Ms. Brochet will also approve after that.
Alex, the chair.
Yes, sir.
It's a little bit of time since I read the contract. I understand there's a quarterly, there's an annual, but I thought there was also a monthly.
There is a monthly. You are correct, yep. And we do the same process for the monthly and the quarterly and the annual. But the quarterly is typically when they will be forecasting and saying, hey, we're going to go over our expense budget, which is offset by the revenues that we're going to gain from that concert or from that event. And it's, just so you guys understand, too, it's common practice in the entertainment industry because you have to be able to book shows and negotiate with these promoters, mm-hmm. and a lot of that, you're budgeting for that expense up front, but the revenue you're not going to realize until later on in the year. So we also manage ASM in a way that precludes them from being able to go at risk on a show. If you know what at risk means, it means they're going to not do a bad deal. We don't let them do that. If they want to go at risk at a show, that's a whole other process. They have to come to us and say, hey, we have an opportunity, very high upside, we want to go at risk, and the administration will make the determination if they're allowed to. Through their normal course of business, they do not go at risk. Every event that they book, secure, or go after has an offsetting revenue. It's just the timing of that revenue is whenever the event occurs, as opposed to the expenses they have to guarantee to promoters ahead of time.
My understanding with the Jaguar lease, everything in ASM is about to be renegotiated anyway, or you know, going to stay with this contract for a while?
Not exactly. The ASM Global contract for our sports entertainment venues was just renewed about a year and a half ago. The new Jaguar negotiations will contemplate that, and we'll find out more information on Tuesday. I will find out more information on Tuesday as well. But we anticipate ASM Global being here through the life of this contract. At our other venues, the stadium, we'll find out.
I guess my question is, whenever you find out that you're going to have a budget issue, the way that it works is notify the city, either they can determine to affect savings by having their own staff or cut stuff out to meet it or to approve the overage. Has it ever been your experience where y'all have advised them of an overage? Where they said, no, we don't want to go over budget. We're going to find some way to make it work under our current budgeting.
No, honestly, no, because it's how they've had to, they have to operate that way. In order to be successful and competitive and book events, they have to book the events, and it is always offset by a revenue later in the year. So we look at the totality of them every year, where they make budget every year by maintaining the level of subsidy or by decreasing the subsidy. So on a quarterly basis, an event-by-event basis, we know they're going to have to go over because it's the course of doing business and it's a timing issue more than anything else. But we know that those events that are going to go, that require them to go over the budgeted expenses are offset by those revenues.
Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Andrea?
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
You mentioned the lack of human capital a couple times anyway. Does that prevent you from... scheduled?
Yeah, so the city, obviously, from a land-wise, is one of the biggest cities in the continental U.S., and the budget is, I believe, when it's all said and done, $6 billion or $6.5 billion. So it's a huge scope. So we have to be selective of what we exert our limited resources on. So it does inhibit us from chasing down every single lead that we get. we have to prioritize, and I know Mr. LaSalle's made a point of handling the big cases. We've looked a lot at the COVID funds that went through the city from the federal government that were potentially misused after the fact. Again, it's retrospective, but that's been a big focus of our office, and we've actually had success with certain criminal prosecutions or referring it to criminal prosecutions. The audit, we have been limited in our auditing staff. It's just a very competitive market with the private sector. The city has a good budget for its employees, but it's always going to pale in comparison to the private sector. And so we had, when I first started, two auditors. We are down to one auditor now. And we had trouble finding auditors to fill these positions because it's just a hard market to recruit in. And I think that's been an issue citywide, is it's tough to fill these city positions because the hiring market's so hot right now.
Okay. Not you. Okay. All right. Anybody else?
I have another question.
Go ahead.
So over a period of, say, the last 2 years in investigations, have you found misuse, and what has happened to these departments or these persons? Are they prosecuted? Are they fired? Do you have to recover money from them?
So, yes.
Or has there been anybody caught?
Yes. So, in particular, the assistance payments that were made through the city with federal funds from COVID, we have referred those for prosecution. Some have pending arrest warrants. We've had at least one, maybe two successful prosecutions with restitution attached to pay back the city. There are other cases that are pending investigation that can't really be discussed, but they are moving towards being indicted or being arrested. As far as city employees, we've found issues. I guess I should have said when I was explaining what we do, we can't take administrative action. We can't recommend someone be fired, placed on probation. Mm-hmm. We just are fact finders. We find the facts, we put them in a report, and we give them to the appropriate organization to make that HR decision. And then they take the information and decide what is the appropriate punishment, so to speak. I think that answered your question. And all of our reports are online, so I would encourage you to go read them because there's a lot of good information. We have great investigators that are doing good work and really making an impact, I think, in the city as far as what we're looking at. But trying to get our message out there is one of the hardest things, is getting out to community groups, members of the city, and introducing ourselves, because a lot of people don't know we exist or what we do. So we've made a big push to go out to sheriff's watches, CPACs, talk to different units within the city, other social groups, to explain like what we do and how people can give us tips, because we can't be everywhere, so we need the eyes and ears of the citizens of Jacksonville, who are usually, you know, much better at seeing these things in real time of what's happening and being able to tell us than we can looking at the data or looking through documents.
Follow-up question.
Can I ask a question? Is that okay?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Just so a quick question. We had the procurement division chief at our last meeting, and we were discussing the new procurement code implementation and the deadline that is coming up for it to be fully implemented and going to effect. And one of the changes that he was discussing was how the IG, the CFO, and the procurement division chief would decide what contracts constitute highly valuable or contracts that have greater visibility that need to be managed in a certain particular way.
Does the IG's office right now have a particular opinion of what type of contract should constitute that type of designation?
Yes, to answer your question, so we were involved in the legislation, gave our opinions on things that should be added, and this is one of those things that we stress is important for these critical, important procurements to have some oversight in. We have an employee who does our contract and grants oversight. He's a former federal agent, worked with several IG's offices, decades of experience in this sorts of thing. And he, along with the rest of the investigative crew, are coming up with a rubric to help identify which one of these contracts would be high risk or critical or whatever the terminology is in the ordinance code to help assist procurement in identifying those. Well, originally it was the pay scale, I believe. Our applicants were just not, we didn't get a lot of applicants. And it actually went for so long without having qualified applicants that we decided to use some of those positions for data analytics, for contract oversight, and shift to doing that. So we are fully staffed at this point in regards to how many full-time positions that we are allotted by the budget. I believe we are requesting another full-time position. Obviously, that will go through the budgetary process, and so we'll see what happens with that. But we weren't able to entice, I guess, some of the a lot of applicants for that auditor spot. So we unfortunately had to shift our focus on to different areas.
That's understandable. Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there a National Association of Municipal Offices of Inspectors General that give guidelines on how they should be staffed and what competitive compensation levels are? And if so, how do we compare?
That's a good question. There is an association for inspector generals that includes all inspector generals, so that'd be federal, state, and municipal. To my knowledge, I don't think that they have that type of information available. They don't isolate it by municipality because that's what you would have to compare it to. Obviously, the federal government pay scale is a little bit different than the state versus the city. So, yes, that would be an interesting thing to look into, but I'm not aware of the Association of Inspector Generals, which is the AIG, having that information.
So you said you had a position. Just feel what was that position?
Excuse me.
There was a position. Just feel. What was the position? You just feel.
Data analytics.
Oh, and
data analyst.
Okay, gotcha.
We are trying to add a position that's going to assist with our contract oversight, which is a big bulk of a lot of the issues here. Is looking at these contracts and seeing how they're executed and how they're managed. The city has a ton of contracts and grants, which presumably they're a contract as well. So having additional resources to investigate those would be very helpful to our office.
Okay, thank you. You had a question?
Yes, one more. I know that the criteria for your participation is high risk. I think that's what they call it. Back when I started in 1988, all of our contracts were high risk because we were all in litigation. Have you ever broken it down based on claims or litigation on whether it was an ITB, RFP, RFQ, design build? Have you ever looked if there's any historical trend with the award of certain contracts recently that have resulted in litigation or overages? Have you ever tried to do it by the type of award?
We have not done that. But with our data analytics software, which we only received less than a year ago, that becomes feasible now. It's one of those things that becomes, since there's such a massive amount of data, it becomes it's a hard thing to do until you have the software and the individual who can do that. And actually, we have that. And so one of our focuses is to get information, get ideas from people of what we should look at. We have this powerful software, but we need to know what we should look at. So that's definitely something that we could look at.
One thing that they do have, which is a change order log, which I don't know, most people, I didn't even know about it for the first few years I was with OGC, but it just shows on every project, you know, every contract was there and just how much, you know, went into changes. And,
yes.
And the reason why.
And that's going to be a red flag of some sort of bid issue where very low bid and there's constant change orders. We are aware of those types of red flags, and ideally we become where we are able to hook up this software to speak to the software within the city in real time and be able to run reports on this. The software we have, it's called IDEA, has that ability to directly link with proprietary software and get that data real time, unadulterated, and we can create reports for it to run. It's just sort of a slow process of doing that integration and getting those reports up and running.
Question? You have anything? You good? All right. Well,
Daniel might have had one.
You asking a question? Yes, no, I understand your question. So some of these contracts and purchase orders are going to be put on our one cloud system, which we have access to. It's not a easily navigable system, but it doesn't have everything on it. And there are other software systems that are used to manage these contracts. So, yes, there are. These are some of the roadblocks of sharing this data internally and utilizing it is when they're siloed into different areas, it's hard for us to run these reports. And this is in addition to contracts that are entered into by the independent agencies or our agencies like KHA, which gets a lot of money from the city, and then they are the ones who give the grants to different agencies. That's a whole different system, within KHA that we have to communicate with. So the way that Jacksonville is structured, unfortunately, being a consolidated government, can hinder our sharing of data just because of the legacy softwares that are used and them not communicating with each other.
I could just have one follow-up. Just want to make it clear, the Inspector General is not going to administer or oversee all the contracts of the city of Jacksonville if someone makes a complaint. You're limited by what's in the procurement code on the front side to determine high risk. And then if there's a complaint or something which is obvious, which triggers the possibility of a criminal or a intense, then y'all get involved.
That's right. And we, like I said before, we can't be there day to day to make sure, the contractor is using the right nails. we can look at the tail end, but there needs to be a component within the city that's doing that sort of review. And we don't have the expertise to talk about construction materials. We have to rely on the city employees that can tell us, hey, look, these products are not matching what was promised in the bid. And it seems like they are committing some sort of fraud here. With their help, we can look into that. But the day-to-day look at the progress of things is not really something that we have the capability of doing.
Well, we thank you. Thank you, your team, for coming, and I look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, great. So next, Alex Elston from Chief Sports and Entertainment. Is that you?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm here for questions more than anything. I think we answered some of them, but happy to elaborate more or set times up later individually to meet. Like I said, I'm happy to help answer more questions.
Commissioner.
My first question is, when are we going to get an NCAA basketball?
Well, it's funny. I'm glad you asked. The timing's good. If you saw the announcement yesterday,
yes, I did.
We just announced the formation of the Jack Sports Foundation, which is exciting. Been working very closely with Michael Corrigan on that initiative since I started in August. I have a background in sports tourism, having run sports commissions in both Tulsa and Gainesville. So it's very exciting to see our city finally have that effort. So we're excited in our office to be able to support what this organization is going to be going out and getting. I know collectively we've bid on, I think, 19 NCAA championship events. NCAA men's first and second rounds is definitely one of them. So we'll find out in October if we've been awarded. So we feel like the reason for the delay, COVID kind of backed their whole process up. And then not only that, but they switched from a four-year cycle to a two-year cycle. So it kind of put everything a little bit behind. So that's why we've had that gap since 2019. But very excited to get it back. When I was with ASM Global, I actually served as the tournament manager for the event in 15 and 19. So very excited to get back in the rotation there.
So to go back to the issue, whenever there's this gap, the lag between the time that money has to be spent, and so there's an over expenditure, exceeding budgetary authority of expenses, and then I would assume that sometimes in a given reporting period, there's going to be an over expenditure that would maybe be made up after that reporting period and in a separate reporting period where the revenue comes in. So there's essentially a mismatching.
Correct.
It's a timing issue to use accounting verbiage.
Yep.
So is there a time frame within which that timing can be rectified through, a budget modification, and that's done by the city, or is that done by the city council?
I'll have to do some more digging on that, but I know that when the revenues do come in and we receive the report for that quarter or for that month, it will show that it's balanced back out or that in every case the revenue is greater than that expense. In terms of how does it impact and how does it reflect on how the budget is presented, I'd have to get with Anna on that to see how we would manage that, but it's like I said, the revenue comes in.
But what is a typical time lag from the time that revenue would show up and that report's modified?
It completely depends on when that show or when that event is, right? So, I mean, they could be booking a show now for October, November, December.
Oh, so it can be several months.
Oh, it can be months. It's typically not more than a year, but typically within the 3 to 8 to 9 month range when they're booking shows out like that. Mm-hmm. And again, this is not necessarily expenditures, but to your point, it's budget, right? They're acknowledging that is going to be more than budgeted for that time period.
Daniel, questions?
That allows for ASM to be able
to go above their budget allotment with the city's consent. Was the intent when the city agreed to that, obviously I know you weren't here a year and a half ago, is the intent of that provision to deal with what you just spoke to Commissioner Day about? You have these shows, it's hard for you to anticipate the ticket revenue is going to be able to receive in excess of whatever the expense will be, so that provision allows for more flexibility? Or was it a way for the city to be able to control the day-to-day operational costs for ASM to manage the facilities as a whole?
Again, through the chair to Mr. Daniel, I think the answer is somewhere a little bit in the middle, to be honest with you. I think I would err more toward, again, first off, I wasn't here to understand the intent behind the administration at that time with that agreement, but having the historical knowledge I have of how ASM operates, my assumption is that it was done in order to allow ASM to function to the best of their ability on behalf of the city, which is be able to program our venues as often as possible and try to generate as much revenue as possible. So in order to do that, there's a level of flexibility that has to be in play for them to be able to book shows and to work with promoters who ultimately carry the risk, right? So I think that's another layer of comfort that city has, is that when they deal with these promoters, the promoter's assuming the risk, right? So, but we still have those upfront expenses and those budgets that we have to make sure are covered. But we as a city have even more comfort because the promoter is the one that's really going at risk. So that's what I would assume is the intent behind it, for sure. I would be hesitant to go into too much detail on that as I am not Ms. Broche. I can tell you that the request to use the portion of funding that was discussed to put it in there to be allocated before the end of the year is still in the CIP for next year. So there are requests that ASM has for some venue maintenance that really needs to be done. So I think the intention there was to make sure that from a timing perspective, they were able to get those things that are at the top of the CIP list in now during the off season of the Center for Performing Arts. Now, to speak to where the money is from and the intent behind how they're going to do it, I would rather Anna Broche be able to answer that. But I can tell you from the function of how ASM plans to use the funds, it is a part of the CIP, but being able to use it now to handle those things during an off-season instead of impacting not only the season at the venue, but also being able to book other events at the venue, I think that was the intent behind the ask for right now, being able to allocate it.
No, we hear you move them.
How you doing? appreciate the question. Did I answer it?
You did.
Okay.
I just
okay.
Had one
yeah.
Box one.
Yeah, ma'am.
I have to depart.
So. Okay, good, darling. Don't do anything. See you next time.
Take my seat. Oh, you got a seat.
He's got a seat. See you later.
So, do you really, to fulfill the last, to that provision with the monthly reports that you're going to be receiving, mm-hmm. what you already receive, mm-hmm. do you feel that gives you enough flexibility to be able to control costs and to live up to that provision? Because I imagine the whole point as to why it existed was to ensure that the city was fully aware of all the increased costs that may happen. So does the monthly reports you feel give you that?
Yes, I do. And I think it's one of those situations where the language had always been there, right, in terms of they would need approval. But I think administrations are different, and I can't speak to how one administration handle the approvals versus another. So we're just trying to now be, you know, in compliant with what that agreement says and make sure that we are doing an actual approval. And we do look at it. I have a call with ASM's general manager every other week. We talk pretty much every other day. So I have a level of comfort in understanding how their business goes and what new opportunities are coming to be confident in the approval of those monthly and quarterly reports when those things are going to go over budget. Absolutely.
All right. My question was, and you may not be able to answer this because I think you kind of said a little bit about it. I was just wondering the money that was the revenue that's made. Where was it going? But I guess that's a more of a brochure.
Well, the revenue made in general, like when revenues make money.
Yeah. Once you know, person been paid out. You know, you guys met your goal, what have you. That additional money is it put here? That additional money.
We should have a bigger conversation on specifics, right, with Anna and the accounting team. But I can tell you overall, the seven venues that are city-owned venues that ASM manages on our behalf, those operate at a subsidy. So overall, there is a city investment every year that is acceptable and agreed upon in the budget to keep those venues open and operating for the good of the public and to drive economic impact and all those things. So revenues that are generated through those venues offset that subsidy to some degree, right? So it keeps the subsidy from being 30 or 40 million and keeps it down to the, you know, where it is now. So that's in general terms, in terms of venue management, kind of high level, where the revenues go. But there are certain revenues, to your point, that do go to certain things. So your ticketing fees, the 2% of bed tax, those things do go to capital and infrastructure and things like that. But we'd have to get – I can get more specific with all those revenue streams and where they all go. Happy to provide that to this group if you'd like to see it. I think it could be helpful. So, absolutely.
So that, I was just thinking maybe – I think you may have stated already that sometimes you have excess might be used, you know, to put money towards arts or something. You know, we could, or to something. I just wanted to know if it does, where.
Yeah, it's usually, like I said, they're in their operating budget, when they do generate revenues, they're doing things like repairs and maintenance and investing back in the building and things to operate. But the overall budget, they keep that subsidy at or below what is budgeted every year as part of their contract, right? That's part of what we hold them to.
So if we can, I mean, I guess I think that's public, you know, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty easy for us to pull that, but we can show you. We can show, like, their budget and how it operates and then all the revenue streams that are ancillary, like the ticketing fees, parking fees, and everything, and what those go to cover and how those are, yeah, happy to.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah.
Just two.
Yeah.
You say that the developers are at risk. Do the contracts require the developer to provide a bond?
Well, no, I didn't say developer. Sorry, the promoter.
The promoter?
Yeah. No.
Well, if it's an LLC and y'all expend a lot of money, then, I mean, I'm just saying, What security do y'all have within the industry? Maybe you don't do that.
But. Yeah, well, I think that's part of the reason that as a city we've chosen to have a venue manager, right? Because the venue manager is taking all of that on. So their corporate office, the relationships they have with the promoters, we're basically outsourcing that so that the city doesn't have to get into the situation of dealing with promoter contracts and artist contracts. So that's ASM handles that on our behalf and serves as a buffer between us and them.
You know, about 5 months ago, the stadium got some bad press with regards to rats and everything in there. Is that ASM? Is that the city? Is that the Jaguars? Ultimately, whose responsibility is it to try and keep the facility a friendly and in a warm place?
That is a loaded question, and I will try to be as transparent as I can with my answer. But it takes all of us. I think in the most honest terms, everyone has a stake in that building and how it operates and how it is maintained, right? Ultimately, it is a city-owned venue. So if you ask any of our tenants at any of our venues, the tenant is going to look to the city and say, you're responsible for this venue because you are our landlord, and we are responsible. So we hire ASM to handle the day-to-day and deal with all those issues as they arise. We expect them, and they do, to bring us issues that come up. But therein lies some of the challenge that you deal with when you have a lot of requests and only a certain amount of money to get everything done. So I think historically when you look at things that come up, there are times where ASM might provide us with a list of things that, hey, guys, you need to do this. But not every time where we're going to say, okay, we'll do all of them. So sometimes when certain priorities are different, certain things get done, certain things don't. So it's a balancing act. It's a priority act, just like everything else is. It's unfortunate some of those things happen and they go into the media, but it's the reality of running a big building like that. I think everyone has similar issues across the country and across the globe when it comes to managing venues. But ultimately, it's the city's responsibility. But we look to ASM to provide us with what they need, tell us what they need, and we try to get it to them.
Thank you.
Question.
during the budget process last year, when ASM was in front of the budget, on the mayor's budget committee, they had mentioned that they were exploring naming rights for the Times Union Center as a way to be able to kind of generate revenue to be able to do future repairs at that facility. Is that something that's still ongoing, or is that in a different place?
It is ongoing. It is a process that is not, I wouldn't say we've gone to market, so to speak, but it is something that that we've tasked ASM with quietly trying to accomplish. I've had conversations with our stakeholders at the Performing Arts Center to let them know it's something that we're looking into and that we want to partner with them to make it happen. So, yes, it is something that we are exploring for sure. No, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Don't forget to get the information for me.
I will get it for you.
All right. Yep. Thank you, sir. All righty. Okay. Okay. Auditor's report.
Yes, ma'am. Through the chair, to the commission, council auditor's office has released two reports since the last true commission meeting. Report number 824A, follow-up on capital assets audit, was released on April 10th of 2024. This is the first follow-up of the capital assets audit, and that audit was released on April 9th of 2019. The original audit had 15 issues identified. This follow-up addressed 11 of those 15, so there are four issues remaining. The first issue is the process for the capital asset group in accounting to do random inventory checks. In our next follow-up, we'll look at this process they said they've implemented. We also found no policies and procedures to address timely reconciliation, the timely recording of assets into the capital assets system. And then the other one was reporting of assets that are reported to the sheriff's office as lost or stolen should also be reported to the council auditor's office according to ordinance code, and we found that they weren't always included in our office with that. So, and then we had an opportunity for improvement that the Florida Administrative Code requires that certain information be recorded into the capital asset system. Last inventory date, responsible custodian, and disposition information, which was not being done. So we those are the four items that remain.
Okay. Have to do another follow-up? Okay, for those four. All right. Any questions from any of the commissioners before you
move on? Report number 881. It's the audit of the indigent care agreement with Shands. It was released on April 18th of 2024. Our objective was to determine whether patients whose bills were charged to the city's charity services contractual account were qualified per the agreement between the city and Shands. What we found, we had basically three findings and internal control weakness. We found that the city was not monitoring Shands' compliance with the agreement. This has been an ongoing issue. Several audits and a follow-up, actually. We found that medical care costs billed to the city contract account was not charged based on patient fee schedules that were in the agreement. And since compliance with the agreement was not being monitored, the city was not aware of that. So there was about $26,000 overcharged to the city. Shands was not consistently evaluating patients' Medicaid eligibility status in accordance with the agreement, and that was about a $16,000 overcharge there as well. This was released on April 18th. And unless anybody has any questions on that,
yes, sir. Follow up.
There will be a follow-up.
For the $42,000?
Well, it'll be a follow-up to ensure that Shands is... They're researching that, yes.
Exactly. All right, go ahead, Daniel.
This also came up during finance because I know the council auditor mentioned it, and I know since the CFO was already at the podium, she had said that they were going to make efforts to monitor it more. But I'm curious, from your office's perspective, what does monitoring look like? Is that getting the actuals on a month-to-month basis? Is that having Shands provide reports? What do you guys view as compliance in that particular internal control weakness?
Well, just to give you a little history on we first issued this report, a report on Shands from one of our offices of Shands back in 2010, and this was still an issue. This was an issue then. We and the city agreed to start monitoring the agreement. We followed up on that issue three times, report 737, 782, and 804. But still, it's not been done on a consistent basis. Basically, I mean, what we recommend, we continue to recommend the city implement documented monitoring procedures to ensure contract compliance. So that would be. To document what they've done to ensure compliance based on the contract. Now, I haven't seen the contract, so I can't.
You stumped my next question.
So I can't tell you everything that is in there that needs to be complied with, but the department or the city's response, the Finance and Administration Department has since begun quarterly monitoring procedures of the U.S. Shands Indigent Care Agreement, which we have performed and documented for the quarters ended June 23 and September 23. So at least it seems that that has at least started with this administration. And so, of course, that'll be something we look at when we follow up. It's like, show us documentation showing track compliance.
And I'm assuming that they said quarterly. Does that mean that they receive something from Shands to essentially verify that? I know you don't have the contract.
I'm not sure.
That's why I left that part out of my question.
I'm not sure. But I know that they're monitoring the procedures of the contract, so I'm sure there's certain things in there that need to be addressed and monitored.
And then when's the next follow-up audit? Is that 3 years from now? Or?
Hopefully not 3 years, but we try to attempt to get based on workflow and everything else. 18 to 24 months is when we try to do the follow-up. But it always happened because of
long time.
The Madam Chair,
this
is probably definitely something that we probably want to bookmark so that way we can follow up with.
Yeah, definitely.
Which department oversees this?
Finance and Administration.
And it's been an issue since 2010, you said?
That's when we first reported on it. It was another audit that was.
I'm wondering.
That city has an issue with contract.
Is there what is the finance? What are they supposed to monitor? I guess that's in the contract as far as what they're
reporting of how the monies are spent. The monies that the bills that are charged to the city's charity services. There's a certain amount of money that the city gives to Shands. On a kind of a complicated way. But anyway, for individuals that don't have insurance or don't have the ability to pay those bills, certain criteria, and then they use that money to help pay the patient's bill for services. So things that would be monitored were, you know, were the patient's residents of Duval County. That's a requirement. They need certain income levels, things like that. You know, they get a report and push out, be careful with HIPAA laws and all this other stuff and other things. But you know, you get a report and those, the big thing was, were they eligible? Various other options that they can do. Chance, I'm talking about. And then we're supposed to be the city's payer of last resort. That's what we're supposed to be. Found that we're not always the payer of last resort. It's
a higher on this. Payer of easy resort?
Interesting, they've been out of compliance for years.
Yeah, I know. So is there any way, Jeff, that we can invite them to come out and speak with us, the financial committee? Is it possible? Or do we have to wait till the follow-up? That's a long time.
You would like someone from the finance department to come
in reference to this situation,
talk about what they have begun to do?
Yes. What number is that? Is it 8? What is it? 881, if it's possible. Invite anyway.
Sure, we can extend the invitation.
Can we do that? Let's do it.
You want me to, sure.
Yes, sir, let's do it, let's do it, let's do it. All right.
Can I follow up with Jeff on one thing? Jeff, I'm going to borrow your brain because I know you have encyclopedia knowledge. When Council President Salem had that special committee meeting on Chance, this was one of the major topics. It was.
Okay, cool.
And I feel like it was a couple months ago. They were talking about inmates at the jail and having to go to Shands for medical care. Is this the same funds that covers that cost, or is that separate or different?
It is the same fund. What happens is any, well, I shouldn't say any, inmates who are transported from the jail to Shands to have some medical care. I don't know if Tommy knows if they are required. I mean, typically if they're in jail, they don't have the financial resources to, they don't have insurance or some other way to pay for their care. I was going to say the city automatically picks up the tab for prisoners who are seen at Shands. And what they particularly noted, I think it was the auditor's office, noted that you would think that a prisoner who is taken to Shands is only going to be on the city's books for as long as they would have been in city custody. And what they found was that if you were in jail for 10 days and 3 days into it you went to the hospital and were released from custody, before you were released from the hospital, they kept charging the entire stay to the indigent care account because that's how they started when they came in. And so they just charged the rest of the stay to that bill.
That's why I asked the question.
All right, well, thank you for that, and definitely invite them. I don't know. Do we have anybody for next month at all?
Yeah, ABC, I believe.
General contractors are coming to talk in June.
Yeah, unless you want to ask them, see if they can come next month, please. All right, thank you. So that's it, isn't it?
Just a couple more items.
Oh, my bad.
This will be quick.
Okay.
I promise. While this is not actually a report, but pursuant to the city's municipal code, our office works with Finance Administration Department on the General Fund, General Services District recapture amounts for fiscal year 22-23. And this basically is a return of the funds that came from the General Fund, General Services District, to provide a subsidy to other funds. And so at the end of the year, those funds are looked at. Administration will send us their recommendations. We'll go through and we'll have our own recommendations, and we talk with the finance department and come with final. Like, anyway, the long story short is that we recaptured $7 million from the various funds to bring back into the general fund, and those funds were recaptured and placed into the operating reserves. That was done on April 4th, and also our office just recently completed our peer review. They reviewed 3 years of our work papers. They look at our policies, procedures, everything like that. And our office received the highest grade of pass. There are three grades: pass with deficiencies, or fail. So,
congratulations.
Thanks. That concludes my report.
Well, thank you. Well, you have a question?
Yeah. Talk to me like I'm a small child. What is the General Service District? You just referenced that. I thought I knew, but you just mentioned the General Service District in terms of how they kind of recoup the
regional core.
No.
No.
Now, the General Services District is the entire county.
County. That's right. I had to think about that for a second. Yeah.
You were thinking of Urban Service District 1, yeah, which was the old city before consolidation. The General Services District, it covers everything. That's the beaches, Baldwin. Everybody pays for the basic services that everybody gets countywide.
Got it. So that's just essentially like an accounting term that
it's
the legal designation.
Right. It's the legal it's the legal designation of the general fund. And so,
got it. Okay.
Cool. We're going to go on to the audit committee. Okay. All right. Thank you. How about the legislative tracking committee? Did that occur?
Nope. No meeting of them either.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
The SMB Global Contract Committee?
Nothing new.
All right. Okay. Great. All right. Chair's comment. I don't have anything right now. We just will have two guests next month. Old business.
Under old business, at the bottom of your stack of papers, you should find the resolution that you all passed at the last commission meeting regarding two additional positions for procurement. Yes, thank you. So I drafted that up. If you all want to take a look at it, make sure it says what you intended for it to say. If you want anything added or subtracted, I can do that and get it to the chair to sign, to send on to the mayor and the chief administrative officer.
Through the chair, just a question. The fact that we were asking for it to be included, but we also put a prayer in there that the city council would also fund it, that it'd be requested and would be approved? Or is that going too far? Are we just asking for her to request it without a request for funding?
Since you're directing it to the mayor, I think that's probably a little beyond the scope of, I mean, she's hoping that they will fund all kinds of things.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Pryor has found a typo that I will fix.
I'm still looking at it. Okay. looks good.
Okay, then I will correct that one typo. I will send it to you for you to sign, and you can scan it back to me, and then I will deliver it to the mayor's office. No, I think you all approved it at the last meeting.
It's already been approved, yeah. That's why we don't have to do it. Yeah.
Sort of drafted afterwards, so I just want to make sure it captured what you were intending to vote on when you voted.
Sorry. Voting and everything. Okay, anything else for old business? New business.
Sorry, I don't know if this was discussed earlier, as I unfortunately had to attend another hearing before joining this meeting, but old business regarding excess property and the like, things of the nature like Grace and Truth properties and so forth. Did the Office of Inspector General address any of that when they were here earlier?
Talk about particularly that. We've talked about a lot of things. We didn't particularly talk about. Unfortunately, he wasn't here because, you know, everybody had a chance to speak on different various topics. So, no, we didn't. I'll be honest with you, we didn't. But he's they're at our disposal at any time.
Okay.
You know,
I think Commissioner Day also, Commissioner Day also said, because I think he was alluding to it, that if we wanted them to directly look into that issue, they would be open to doing that if we asked.
Right. So basically, before both of you, you were on the phone, but anyway, anytime we have an issue that we want to be addressed or taken to another level, we let them know, and they're gladly to move forward.
And I know that we had talked about, or I had asked last month about the lawsuit for that one particular property. Did you find any information about that? Yeah, there was one on Ionia. What's that?
He had stepped up by that time.
I had to leave before the end of the meeting.
Okay.
What is it you're looking for?
Well, one of the properties that was donated to Grace and Truth was then sold outside of the affordable housing realm. And on the spreadsheet that you forwarded to us, I believe it, there was a little blurb there about there being I don't know where I saw it, but there was a blurb somewhere that I saw that there was some type of lawsuit regarding that particular property. Yes. And with the city. And I wanted more information about that particular lawsuit. I was not able to find it on my own. I dug a little bit. I mean, I might be able to find it if I dug some more, but I figured you'd probably find it a lot faster.
I will look into it.
Thank you.
Through the chair, I don't know for sure, but you might want to call me Jeff, because I think that my law firm just got through handling a lawsuit that involved the transfer of property, which I just found out about after y'all mentioned it here, which I didn't participate in. The issue of reverter and people selling it. So if you want to contact me, if you have any problem, get it. I can give you a case number if that's the one she's talking about.
Okay. Be coming to you right real quick. So you'll be getting it real quick if he, you know,
yeah,
he's right.
Yeah.
You get that real quick. Anything else on old business before we go to new business? All right, thank you for bringing that up. All right, new business. It will be in the future. We have, I think, at least one more commissioner coming soon. There he is over there. What's your name? He also was a cohort with me in Cal University. We met.
Good afternoon. I'm Alex Hoffman, CPAC District 2. I did get to sit with Madam Chair at the Community University. That was pretty fun April.
Yes, yes.
So I'm just excited to be on the commission and kind of help everyone out.
Welcome. So he's just waiting. So it'll be happening soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, it's May 20th is my commission date. So
okay, cool.
We'll see.
Thank you.
We're going to need a bigger room.
Yeah. They won't let us come back on upstairs.
You know, we're going to need a bigger room.
Right.
We're getting to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we'll go around for commissioner comments. We'll start over there with you.
I don't have anything. Thank you.
We all have our good.
This is an old thing that we discussed probably months, maybe even last year, but I have an interest in where we stand on the OneCloud. When I hear other departments still talking about, well, problems with it, but there's still some that have not implemented it, I'm just wondering, what is the status? Are there other departments that are planning on implementing it or are not? Or is it just whoever has come on now, that's it? I'm just very interested in the status of it. If could be.
I can tell you just very briefly that it's OneCloud consists of a number of different modules. Yes. There's a financial management system. There's an HR system. There's a, you know, all kind of time and attendance system, all kinds of different modules. A number of them have been implemented citywide. Everybody's financial information is in there. Everybody's HR personnel stuff is in there. There are other modules that are still to come.
Okay.
And I don't know, have no idea where they stand on. I think part of it is they're still trying to get the original baseline stuff to work well enough to get that working smoothly before they go throw yet another module in there that somebody then has to debug that. So.
Okay.
Exactly.
I don't either.
For the sake of time, I don't have anything.
Yes.
I see you look at your corner of your eye. Yes, sir. Sir.
Very briefly, we live in this century, and I got to believe the IRS in some bigger cities, I hate to say using AI or artificial intelligence, but there must be some programs where you can put parameters in and they can follow the name and the date of birth of patients and determination as to whether, because I don't think everybody that gets arrested is automatically indigent. Some of them do have health insurance. I mean, there has to be a better way of tracking the stuff as opposed to expecting somebody in Ms. Brochet's office to stay there all night. I mean, I would think there has to be something that exists that either the state or federal government or other large cities or businesses use.
Tantalize me.
Don't
so
do it,
much.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
I was just going to say to Jeff, if it's possible, whenever you're making the invitation, if ahead of time they can how they bill and what happens in that circumstance where they do have an inmate that does end up having insurance and what efforts that Shannon makes to try to recruit funds from insurance as opposed to just billing the city.
Exactly.
We're a lovely big
well, if any of you have specific things that you would like to know like that, email them to me.
That's
and then
saying,
I can forward those to Ms. Brochet with the invitation.
Thank you. Okay, well, I'll make a motion to adjourn the meeting.
So moved. Second.
All right, it has been properly approved and seconded. Time to adjourn the meeting at 5:29. Thank you all.
We all say aye. Guess I'll be seeing you shortly for lunch.
Yes.
Okay.